What's up, y'all? Welcome to Sports Minded. I'm your host, Brittany Young. And now I want to introduce my guest. He's a native of Bessemer, Alabama, BKA Bessemer, an Air Force veteran. Thank you for your service. An
Thank you.
author, actor, and TV personality, a former studio host at ESPN, and currently a studio host at Fox Sports. Mike Hill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, BY. Appreciate you, Britt. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So I want to get right into it and talk about your background. Now, I know you were born in the Bronx, New York, but you spent most of your formative years in Bessemer, right? Or were you back and forth between the two?
I spent most of my years in Bessemer, Alabama. I went to high school, went to school, middle school down there in Bessemer, Alabama, Davis Middle School. Then I went to Jess Lanette High School, class of 88. They call it Bessemer High right now. But I used to always go back to New York for the summertime. So really during the school year, I was always in Alabama. So that's why I call my formative years. I was there for the majority of the time. And then, you know, I go spend 2 months in New York in the summertime, go back to my grandmother.
Okay. And you mentioned Jess Lanier, which is now Bessemer City High School, where your senior year you actually received Journalism Student of the Year. So talk to me about how you got into writing and journalism.
It's funny because I remember when this is always a funny story to tell. When I was in the 10th grade, I've always been like a class clown. I've always been a person that was smart but never really applied himself. And I remember I had this teacher named Miss Sanders in the 10th grade. She was my English teacher, and I used to give Miss Sanders a hard time, and I didn't think she liked me whatsoever. She couldn't stand me, right? And so I, you know, obviously I passed English in the 10th grade, moving on to the 11th grade. And then my 12th grade year, I remember right before you know, how you got to ask for your electives and stuff like that going to your 12th grade year, Miss Sanders, who taught journalism, said, "Hey, have you picked your electives yet?" And I was like, "No." She said, "Well, why don't you try journalism?" And I'm like, "But you teach journalism. Why you want me to get in your journalism class?" I'm like, "But I did it anyway." Now, come to find out, she knew she wasn't gonna be teaching journalism the next year. She knew this teacher named Miss Bedford, who I don't think she liked, was teaching journalism. So she wanted me to be in her class, whatever, give her a hard time. But you know, I'm thankful for Miss Sanders. That's always been my little reason why I believe. Like, that's just my thought process of why she asked me to be in that journalism class. Because she knew she wasn't going to be teaching, and she knew Ms. Bedford was going to teach, and I don't think she cared too much for Ms. Bedford, but it worked out for me, so I appreciate Ms. Sanders for doing that.
Yeah, so it was kind of like a setup, but it ended up being a ram in the bush for you.
It did. It was like, you know, that's how God works sometimes. You know, sometimes it's like, you know, even I wouldn't say she's my enemy at all. She actually helped me. Sometimes, you know, your enemy will, or some people that don't like you, don't care about you, will put you in situations that you might feel uncomfortable or might think that there is benefiting for them. But in the end, it benefits for you. So I'm thankful for what she did, because I would have never thought about journalism if it wasn't for Miss Sanders asking me to be in that class.
Good deal. And I see you also lettered in both basketball and football. So, did you not want to play any sports in college, pursue anything? Did you not receive any offers?
No, I wasn't good. I mean, just because you play ball and stuff like that, and I don't know if it, like, letter, I'm like, I played on the team. Like, if that letter of me being varsity and stuff like that was cool. But like, I knew at an early age that, you know, when you get called sorry enough by your teammates,
Oh, Lord.
when you're a big man and you can't jump, you already realize, you know, like, I held my own or whatever. I just didn't, once again, just like my schoolwork, didn't apply myself. I didn't develop until a little bit later, to be quite honest with you. I was always tall, but I had a growth spurt and my knees just couldn't take it. My back was always messed up or whatever. So I just wasn't as athletic as I was. You know, I just wasn't fundamentally sound. I wasn't coordinated. But when I went to the military and I started lifting weights a little bit, that's when I started playing ball a little bit better. So I played on the base team when I was in the military in the Philippines, and played for my squadron and whatnot, and basketball and football. And I did okay for myself over there, but I knew at an early age that sports wasn't going to be my future. I need to talk about it more so than try and play it if it's going to be anything that I made a living off of doing.
I got you. I got you. So I'm guessing since sports weren't your forte, you decided to go to the military. So why the Air Force?
My cousins, Reggie and Maine, they were in the Air Force themselves, and I knew at that time I wasn't going to be able to apply myself. Like I said, a good smart student just didn't apply myself. I needed the discipline, and if you would have told me to go to college at that time, I saw too many people from Bessemer go to college for a year and then come on back and then just get an odd job in Bessemer. You know how it is there. You know, they'll go off, go party all the time, pledge or something like that, and come on back, never graduate. And then they just get a job at Walmart. Nothing against that if that's what you want to do, but I knew I wanted something different. So I saw my cousins, Reggie and Maine, who I looked up to, who were like my only real male role models that I had in Bessemer at the time that were older than me, do something. And I was like, okay, well, they look good doing it. And then they had a new car that came back with a new car. You know how that is for people in Bessemer. Come back with a nice, shiny new car or whatever and some money, look good. So I was like, I can do that too. So that's why I went in, and it, once again, one of the best decisions of my life.
Right. So they were an example of what success looked like to you, because I know being from Birmingham, we don't have a lot of, you know what I mean, people who have made it in certain areas, or you may have somebody who make it in the rap industry or something like that, but they don't necessarily claim Birmingham because they maybe didn't get their footing there. So we don't have a lot of examples of it. So I see how you see your family members going to the Air Force and having some money and looking good. You're like, I want the same thing for myself. So that's cool.
Yeah, we just, I'm
Go
sorry,
ahead.
go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, we just like in me growing up in the 80s, like we didn't have the internet. We didn't have, luckily coming from New York and going back and forth to New York, I always say this kind of helped me out because I was able to actually see certain areas of success being in New York and seeing I can go to Manhattan or go to, Upper East Side and I can see how some people live. When you lived in Bessemer, and a lot of people who lived in Bessemer at the time never really went out the city. I know a lot of people that I grew up with never went past Birmingham. They had never gone to Atlanta, never gone out of state or whatever. So they didn't really see a lot of examples of success. Me coming back and forth from New York, I actually saw success. So I knew that there was a little bit more out there if I tried to apply myself. And I knew that. And then plus, seeing Maine and Reggie go off and doing what they did and come back and being that example definitely helped me out. So to your point, I just didn't see a lot of examples of it in the beginning. A lot of people that were my peers that grew up with me didn't see a lot of examples of it. And it affected them because if you don't see it, sometimes you don't feel like it's real, even though if you see it on television here and there. But even back then, it wasn't that many examples because we didn't have the internet. We didn't have YouTube. We had cable, but we just didn't see a lot of us on television making it that way outside the Cosby Show.
And I think that's still the case now. You know, I have my thoughts and reasoning behind it, but for somebody who spent some time in New York, which I know is much faster pace, a lot more opportunities, what do you think can be done, like, to really help that case?
It's one of the things I'm working hard to do now, man. One of my goals is to go back and to be able to help the community in Bessemer, Alabama. One of the things I want to do, one thing I will do, and I've always pledged myself that I'm going to do this and speaking that into existence, is I'm going to go back and I'm going to buy the block that I grew up on and I'm going to build a learning center, a community center, something that teaches STEM. And for the people and the kids that want to get something more out of life to apply themselves, I think that's what I want to try and bring to the community. But yeah, to your point, I think to expose them to something bigger and then have people like myself, like even though I could just easily claim New York and say, hey, I was in New York or whatever, spent time in Alabama, hey, represent Bessemer, Alabama to the fullest and basically say, hey, if I made it out of Bessemer, so could you. I grew up probably maybe even less fortunate than a lot of people in Bessemer or in the surrounding communities or whatever, but if I can do it, so can you. So I think being the example of people like yourself going back and showing people, hey, you know what? This was the path that I took or whatever, and just being, accessible to them, somebody that they can actually touch, somebody they can reach out to, somebody they can be proud of. So I think we just need to expose them to a better life and get them out of the mindset that we get conditioned under that, hey, this is what we have, this is all we got, and in order to get certain ways, we got to do it the wrong way. And I want to go back and teach them that, the wrong way or just the entertainment or the athletic way is not the only way to get out. There are so many different ways you can get out, but you have to want it for yourself first.
I agree. And thank you so much, because it's needed. So I'm happy to hear that's your plan to do that.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I want to talk about how you broke into broadcasting. Did you have a job in communications while you were in the Air Force, or did you do some type of school?
Yeah, I was so the way I got in broadcasting, I was at working at the National Security Agency, NSA, and I've always like after doing journalism, being a journalist student of the year, and actually seeing somebody once again, a guy named Michael Hill used to be a broadcaster. He worked at Channel 6 in Alabama back in the day, BRC 6. And his name was Michael Hill. He was a reporter who was black like me. And I saw him like, wow, he got my name. I could do the same thing. I'm in journalism, whatever. I actually ended up marrying his niece, just ironically, right? That was my first marriage, whatever. And saw that. So when I was in the military, I kind of always knew that journalism was going to be my path and the Air Force was going to be my path to do it. Now, it was deferred for a couple of years, but when I was in NSA, when I moved to Maryland, they started a program where they actually, instead of giving those boring reports to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, NSA, CIA, FBI, to the president and people like that, they wanted to do it in news form. So I was going to school on the side and broadcasting school on the side and had an internship at a station, a Fox affiliate in Baltimore, and they knew that, and so they wanted to start a program, and we started a program my last 2 years at NSA to actually give these news briefings, these classified news briefings to all these heads of all these people that had these clearances or whatever, and that's how I basically got in. The day I got out of the military is the day I got my first job in broadcasting.
All right. Okay. So you were formerly at ESPN, but you talked about being at a station in Baltimore. So can you talk about your role to getting to ESPN and what your experience was like?
It's a journey. I mean, like I tell kids today, it's different than it was when I was growing up because you got so many different paths that you can take now. So when people ask me for advice, I'm like, it's so much different when I was coming up in the mid-90s or whatever. But you know, because you can start your own YouTube, Instagram, what you're doing right now, on your Zoom and doing your own podcast and things like that. We didn't have any of that back in the day. So my path was like I had to actually try and secure a job at a local TV station, which I did the day I got out of the military. Went from Hagerstown, Maryland, spent 6 months there, then went to Fresno, spent 2 years in Fresno, went to Fresno from Nashville, 3 years there. After Nashville, was in New York for 2 years, Dallas for 2 years, and then I got the ESPN. So it was a path. I had to go through these local markets, weekend sports anchor, weekday sports reporter, sometimes anchoring on the weekdays or whatever. Ups and downs, highs and lows, just a path, just like anything else that you try and grow in. If you go to a Fortune 500 company, some people start in the mail room and work their way up. But I had a goal in my mind. I had a path that I wanted to reach. I had dreams and I was going to make those dreams come true. So I had to put the hard work in and dedication. I had some good people to help me out along the way. But the path was, it was what it was. It made me a better person for where I am right now. And I'm still walking on a path right now because I still got higher goals in mind. But, you know, in a nutshell, that's just how I got from there to ESPN. Once again, it was not easy, but it was something that I really wanted. And it's something that, thank by the grace of God, it came true.
Okay, and that was actually one of my questions I was going to ask, the advice you would give to a young person who wants to be a reporter or a commentator or a studio host in today's era, because you don't necessarily have to have a degree in journalism. You could just start you a YouTube channel and grow from there. But that is kind of discouraging for somebody who maybe is in school for it and or has been in the business and has taken that journey, worked at this place for 2 years and gone over here, and we know the money isn't what, you know, all that good in the beginning, and somebody who may come over here and start a YouTube channel and get an opportunity that you don't, like, how do you keep somebody encouraged and say, okay, stay focused on your path and it'll work out? Or maybe the goal isn't to get to ESPN or Fox Sports, it may be something else. Like, what should their mindset be?
Your mindset should be that you're gonna make it, regardless of what's out there. Regardless if there's 10 people, 10 candidates for the job, and there's one opportunity, you're gonna be the one. That's your mindset. And if it doesn't happen for you on that one, the next one's gonna be there for you. Always continue to believe in yourself. Don't get discouraged. Keep on pushing, keep on fighting, keep on doing whatever you need to do. Be prepared for that moment to happen because what's for you is for you. And I had to learn this a long time ago, and it's something I still deal with right now because here I am, a person that's been doing this for 30 years now. And there are people, like you said, that could start a YouTube channel up tomorrow and get the job that I think I want. But sometimes I realize in life that the jobs that you want aren't for you. This is just my spiritual side talking. Your path is going to be your path, and the path that God put you on is going to be right for you. I know some people aren't as spiritual as I am or whatever, but I'm telling you, do not be discouraged. Keep on pushing. If you believe in yourself, somebody eventually will believe in you. There are so many different ways to make it towards your goal. There are other people that's gonna surpass you. They're gonna be people that you're gonna move along the way, and it's gonna ride up along you, and you're gonna be doing it together. And all of a sudden, they're gonna catapult the fame while you're over here, and nobody knows your name or whatever. But that might not be your time. Just keep on working, keep on grinding, keep on figuring it out, and then eventually, he's gonna show you the favor that you get, because there are gonna be some times where you might get an opportunity that other people felt like they were in running for, and you weren't even thought about. You ain't even think about that position. When I got the ESPN, I really wasn't even thinking about ESPN at the time. ESPN, I said it was a goal because everybody wants ESPN to be a goal. But the reason I got ESPN is because I got fired in Dallas. Had I not gotten fired in Dallas, I would not have even thought about ESPN. I wouldn't have applied to the position at ESPN. So sometimes your journey along the way will get cut short by something that you feel like is a burden, but it'll turn out to be a blessing for you. So once again, I know it's easier said than done, because I still deal with it to this very day. When I look at the landscape and look at the hard work that I put in, and look and see that my phone doesn't ring for certain jobs, opportunities, I see other people that I actually mentored along the way getting opportunities or whatever. It burns a little, but at the same time, I cannot get discouraged, because I know that what I'm supposed to have, I will have, and I'm going to be prepared for it. So I just tell people along the way, man, just like, hey, don't give up, because when you give up on yourself, that's when you truly fail. Before then, there is no failure. There is only failure to yourself. So just keep on pushing and making it happen, and it will eventually happen for you one day. I promise you
That's a good word. That was for me too. I received that. So thank you.
that.
Well, okay, you said the goal, you weren't thinking about ESPN at the time, but I assume maybe ESPN still was on your radar, like you wanted to eventually get there. You got there. Okay.
I mean, like, look, ESPN, if you're a sportscaster, people told me when I was coming up, when I was in Nashville, when I was in Fresno, because, coming in, I came in hot. Once I got that first job, I came in hot. I was like moving up through the ranks very quickly. And I thought I was hot, you know what, or whatever. And like, that's where ego gets in the way. Everybody, your colleagues, or you going to ESPN one day, because this is when ESPN was starting to come into its own. You going to ESPN one day. And I'm like, okay, if it happens, it happens. I applied to ESPN the first time. Didn't get a position. Got turned down, to be honest with you. But then again, I'm like, okay, well, I ain't really wanted it in the first place, right? So I put my mindset on other things, went to New York. Then once again, when I got to Dallas and things happened in Dallas, I got fired. There was another opportunity for me to apply to ESPN because I needed the job at that particular time. But even then, when I applied for the job at ESPN, I didn't get it the second time. I got turned down by ESPN two times. A lot of people don't even realize this. Second time I got turned down, I was a runner-up to this guy named Dari Noka, who got the position. At this particular time, I'm out of work, had been out of work for a year and a half, desperate to get a job. I had applied to a station in Houston, went down to Houston, and they called me in for an interview. I did the audition, I killed the audition. I get to the airport, I get a call from my agent, and I'm thinking ESPN, since they had already turned me down, I'm thinking about them at all. I get a call from my agent, and my agent's like, they want to hire you. I'm like, Houston, I just left. They could have told me I was there, right? It's like, no, not Houston. ESPN had another spot come open, and so they want to bring you in to be an ESPN news anchor. And I'm like, wow. So once again, what's supposed to happen for you will happen for you. I took my mind off it. It was a disappointing feeling at the particular time, but I was focused on going to Houston because I was like, man, I'm good being a local sports anchor, being in Texas, not having to deal with everything I heard about at ESPN. But once again, that path that I wanted to go on, or I thought I was going to go on, wasn't the path that God wanted me to go on. So the path that he put me on, even going to ESPN those 9 years, the ups and downs, the highs and lows, the trials and tribulations, the depression that I went through, everything that I went through at ESPN and in Dallas was all worth it, because without that, I would not be here, and I would not have the hunger to do even more for the next 20 years of my career, which I will have. So it's a path that you think you want to go on, then there's a path that God's going to put you on that's going to be so much better for you.
Amen. Okay, so you got the ESPN, you were there for 9 years. So at what point did you know it was time to go? And then how did you end up at Fox Sports where you are now?
Once again, another what you think is a burden turned out to be a blessing. I spent 9 years there, and it wasn't like I told them I wanted to go. They told me it was time to go. So after 9 years, I was doing radio and I was doing TV, but I was doing more radio than TV, but I was getting paid to do both. And I wasn't doing a lot on TV, then was cutting back. So they didn't renew my contract. Well, they didn't know that my contract wasn't up at the time. That's a long story, another story to be told. It's another blessing that kind of helped because I got paid from that as well. But they told me. But at that particular time, once again, this is how I know that, everything that I go through in my life, I look back on, I realize that my burdens turn to blessings because at that time when ESPN let me go, I was so done with ESPN that I was telling myself that regardless if I had a job or not, the next time my contract was up, I'm not resigning. I'm not going to stay here because I was miserable. I was happy. When you get to the point where you are physically sick going into work, that is God's way of telling you that it's time to go. Sometimes he'll put you in such an uncomfortable position. And he's put me in so many uncomfortable positions, whether it be at work with friendships, relationships, or whatever, and makes you so uncomfortable and miserable. It's time for you to leave. It's time for you to change. And he was doing that. And I was telling myself that, but luckily for me, they came to me. And I don't think anybody would ever say that being fired was a blessing. But being fired for me was a blessing because had I not been fired, I would have stayed there another year. My contract was going on, and I probably wouldn't have had the opportunity I had at Fox at that time. So the day I got let go at ESPN after the contract situation, I was on a plane out here to LA because FS1 and Fox were starting off this new cable station, FS1, and I wanted to be here. I had already come out here, kind of talk to the people, whatever, but they wouldn't offer me a contract because I was still under contract with ESPN for a year and a half. And I didn't want to go to ESPN and ask out of my contract because I didn't want to, at that time, like if they would have said no, they would have made my life miserable for the next year and a half that I was going to be there, or they would have tried to fire me and I wouldn't have gotten paid or whatever. So, but once again, the way God worked is they messed up my contract. I got let go, put me in a position to be able to come out here, came on a plane the very next day. Audition, killed the audition. A week later, I'm working at FS1 LA. Been here for the last 11 years. They've been the best 11 years of my career.
And see, I was going to ask that because that's where you've been. And you talked about being at ESPN and it got to the point where you were sick going to work. So I imagine that's not the case. You've been at Fox Sports much longer. So how has your experience been there?
It's been, I mean, look, it's, look, every place is not a utopia. No matter what you do, you're gonna have, I don't care how great of a job it looks on the outside, no matter how much money you get paid, it's not gonna be a utopia. There are gonna be some days where you just like, oh my gosh, why am I doing this? I can't believe it's my last. I've been times with Fox where I've been like, I've hit my pass, my ID, leaving the lot saying this might be the last time I actually come back on this lot because I'm a seasonal worker there sometimes. And then there have been times I've gone in there and I'm like, I just love being there. I can honestly say that the times that I feel bad about Fox is like 3 to 4%. The rest is like 95, 96%. Am I where I want to be at Fox and doing what I want to do at Fox? Absolutely not. Am I where I need to be? Absolutely. Because once again, I'm under the mindset and I know that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing right now to prepare me for what I am going to be doing. That's a bigger blessing for me. I get that. But the people there are outstanding. They treat you with love, respect. Once again, they're fair. It's the way they see it. I know it's a very subjective business where you can see somebody getting opportunities and you feel like you're better than them. But once again, they got to feel that way. I know it's a lot of politics that go on with every network, every business that there is, and this is just not a broadcasting thing. This is all over the spectrum when it comes to job, relationships or whatever. But you got to be in good standings with all of them. But I love it there, and if they'll continue to have me, continue to give me some days, I would like to have more days. I'd love to stay there a little bit longer. Now, do I want to expand and do other things? Absolutely. But right now, for where I am, I'm where I'm supposed to be, and I'm happy being there. So I love it here. And I just love LA too.
You mentioned you're not doing everything you want to do at Fox. What more is there for you to do, or you feel like you want to do or accomplish?
And that's also some of the things when I tell them that they're like, what more would you like to do? What can we like? Because Fox programming isn't like ESPN's program, right? They don't have as many shows that run throughout the day on the weekdays or whatever. They got shows, but they don't have as many. I feel like I have a really good opinion. I feel like I'm very opinionated. I feel like I'm really outspoken. I feel like I'm critical when I need to be critical, but I'll pull back and I'll call people out for being critical in the wrong places, or I'll call people out for their disparities when it comes to their criticism, whatever. I feel like some of the opinion shows that are on Fox, I know I could be an asset to it, to some of those shows. And I've never done any of those shows. And I've told them that. And it's not something that I'm saying privately to them and not speaking publicly or whatever. I mean, like I mean speaking publicly and not saying anything privately to them. So they know that. And I know that. I know I can do that. But once again, I can't force anybody to put me on any of their shows or whatever. And I'm not saying that they dislike me or whatever. They can't give me a reason why. They're just saying that, their space movement or whatever. They always say that they like me or whatever. But I like to be doing more. I like to have a little bit more exposure. But once again, not where I want to be, where I need to be. So eventually, because I'm not doing some of those things, maybe, a higher power is setting the stage and opening me up to receive something that's bigger on a bigger platform because I'm not doing that right now.
Okay, you talked about receiving something bigger. You actually have your own media company, Thrill of Entertainment, right? So, can you talk about when you started that and maybe some projects and some goals, some things you want to do with it?
Yeah,
It's your time.
I mean, so being behind the scenes, I've always felt like I had a mind to like create things. I mean, like even when I was at ESPN, the reason why I came out, I was at ESPN and I used to create a lot of segments that some segments still like who you got and all that stuff like that. And some segments, I did a segment called one of my mic checks I still do now. I created a show called Both Sides of the Ball when I was there. There are a lot of things that I did at ESPN that, because I was under contract with them as an individual, I couldn't get paid in addition to. So I created my business so that, hey, it's not Mike Hill, but you're hiring Mike Hill, the business side of things, to actually buy whatever ideas I might have. So I did that to kind of protect myself, and then tax purposes too, and like a kind of like a loan out situation for me as an employee of my own company. So that's for business situations. But yeah, some of the projects that I put out there, I pitch shows all the time to not just sports networks. To I've done some pitch some scripts here and there. I pitch dating shows that never really got fully developed or whatever, but I'm working with other production companies. And right now, as we speak, I have a documentary that did get greenlit that will be coming out this year on a major streamer. And hopefully the announcement will be coming out here in the next couple of months. I'll let you know what it is, but it's going to be big. So I'm working on that right now through my production company, Thrill of Entertainment.
Okay, well then I was just gonna say that's your answer right there, that God has freed you up for opportunities like that where you can do your independent thing, because we know with your company you have limitations and we know ownership is big, especially in, well, in any field, but in journalism, like we're talking about people starting YouTube channels and they have full ownership and complete control over what they do. And if you're working for another company like a network, you kind of have to fall in line with what they want you to do. So maybe doing some independent stuff is what God wants you to do more of.
Absolutely. And I mean, but once again, and then I'm also doing stuff behind the scenes outside of sports. I'm doing comedy. I got a comedy show here tonight. I got to do at the laugh, not laugh, at the Comedy Store in Hollywood. So, I'm just trying to branch out, doing some acting. I'm doing everything. I'm trying to pursue whatever gifts and talents that God has placed inside of me. I want to expose and put out to the world and use those talents to the best of my ability.
All right, good deal. Okay, so let's talk about some sports. Let's talk about the Super Bowl, the Chiefs and the Eagles. Now, I expected the Eagles to win. I had them winning, but I didn't expect the game to be as bad as it was, like the blowout. I thought it was going to be competitive just like 2 years ago. So what would you say was the biggest difference between the two matchups?
The Eagles defense and the Eagles weren't afraid of the moment. They had been there a couple of years ago. I think that Super Bowl, a lot of people aren't talking about this, but I think that Super Bowl 2 years ago, having some of those people be in that Super Bowl, lose that game. Jalen Hurts even said after that Super Bowl that he'll be back and he's gonna win it. That motivation of getting in, being on that stage, it's a different animal for anybody that has played in a Super Bowl, for anybody who's even covered a Super Bowl or been around a Super Bowl. You see, it is a different monster. The preparation is different. The nerves for the players, they've always admitted that it's different. Even just the preparation in the halftime show, the expanded halftime show. Athletes are a creature of habit, and so they just like a routine, and sometimes that routine is thrown off because of all the pomp and circumstance leading up to and even during that game. Eagles had been there 2 years ago. They had a better defense. They were ready for the moment, and that defense just wasn't afraid. They had that confidence, and they were motivated. They knew the Chiefs were talking about a three-peat, but the Eagles were talking about winning their own championship. I'm so happy because the reason I'm happy that the Eagles won the game is because just Jalen Hurts, to be honest with you. I've always liked him as a University of Alabama fan. I liked him when he was at Alabama, even when with Oklahoma. I still don't think he gets the respect that he deserves. I don't think he gets the love that he deserves, but hopefully after this win, it will shut a lot of the haters up. And I know there are going to be haters out there regardless, but this guy has done nothing but win since he's been in the NFL. Is he a perfect quarterback? No. Is he a tremendously great quarterback? Yes. Is he an elite quarterback? No. But at the same time, he's a Super Bowl champion, and people are always trying to find some kind of reason to discredit this brother when all he's done is gone out there and win and done what his team has asked him to do. So I'm happy for the Eagles, happy for that defense. And yeah, the Chiefs, they'll be back. I just never seen Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense play that way, but they'll make the adjustments they need to make and bring in the players they need to bring in. And yeah, they'll be definitely one of the Super Bowl contenders out there in the AFC next year as well.
For sure. And I agree. The Eagles defense, that front four, pure
Yeah.
domination. I mean,
Yeah, I
they
ain't never
just
seen the Chiefs offense look like that ever under Patrick Mahomes. I've never, I mean,
right.
that was, once again, they had a will, they had the skill, they had the ability. Give a lot of credit to that Eagles defense. I know Jalen Hurts won the MVP, but if you could split that MVP up among everybody on the Eagles defense, they should have gotten it too. But once again, Hurts deserves everything he got. He did a job as a quarterback. Offensive players usually get that. They can't split it up that way. So as an individual, he got it. But that Eagles defense, leave no question. There's no doubt that that's the reason why they're the Super Bowl 59 champions.
And you mentioned being an Alabama fan. There were seven players on the team from Bama that are
Yep.
now Super Bowl champions. Roll Tide. You
Yes.
also had a big play, Darius Slay from Mississippi State, my undergraduate alma mater, so Hail
Okay.
State,
Okay. Yep.
And I know you're a Giants fan, so I know it hurts you to see Saquon leave and go and win a Super Bowl with the Eagles, but I'm happy for the brother because he had a
I
great
am.
situation.
I am, man. I'm like, hey, look, yeah, I Saquon, like you said, is a good brother, man. It wasn't like he was forcing his way out of the Giants. Once again, I think this is an example. This is a good lesson for a lot of people out there. You need to go somewhere where you're going to be appreciated and not tolerated or whatever. Somewhere where you can actually be, where you can actually grow, you can build. You got to be somewhere. And I'm not saying the Giants didn't want them, but they didn't respect them. And sometimes you got to go somewhere where you are respected, and you got to be somewhere where you're set up to win. And we saw what Saquon had to offer, and the Giants treated him like he was somebody that you could just throw away, and they just let him get away. But that lets you know the organization from the Eagles into the Giants and the separation and just how far they are when it comes to the organization and the class of the organization and how to build a team. But I'm happy for him, even though I'm a Giants fan. I hate to see him go, but I'm also happy for him because if he would have stayed with the Giants, he would not have been in that situation. He's Super Bowl champion because he left the Giants and he went to a better situation that had a better offensive line, a better offense built around him. Like I said, with Jalen Hurts and those with Brown and with
Devontae Smith.
Smith, and Goddard and all those
Oh, yep.
guys. They got so many different weapons with Philadelphia right now. That it can open up things for him. So I'm happy for him that he got his championship.
Okay, and I want to stay with the Eagles because I've been a fan of the Eagles dating back to the Andy Reid era where, he had Donovan McNabb and they made it to a Super Bowl but didn't win, and then
Yep.
Michael Vick
Yep.
came in. And I want to, because I'm happy for Jalen as well. Because when you can go back to his situation at Alabama, you talked about him transferring. I'm really happy for him. But I want to, because I'm looking at Andy Reid and his impact in this Super Bowl and 2 years ago, I'm wondering what is the difference? Like, why he wasn't able to win in Philly? Because in my opinion, Philly should have at least three Super Bowls with three different coaches. They won with Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson and Nick Foles. Carson Wentz got him there, and then he got hurt, and Nick Foles brought it on home. And now with Nick Sirianni and the team that just won, but Andy Reid, with the pedigree of quarterbacks he had, that black quarterback, the dual threat quarterback that can pass the ball and make plays with their legs, which is what he has in Mahomes in Kansas City now, and he's had success. Why do you think he wasn't able to have that same success with McNabb and Vic?
That's a good question. I mean, like, it all has to come together. The fact that he took that team to five straight NFC championship games too, like with McNabb and all those guys, whatever. And they just could never get over the hump, and they got close against, and sometimes, like, sometimes you just it could be like, I'm a Knicks fan. I remember back in the 90s, and Knicks had great teams with Pat Riley as their head coach. They could never get past the Chicago Bulls. For Philadelphia, you could have a great season. You could be consistently good all season, but each year there could be one team in your conference that's just better than you that year. You know what I mean? And it could be sometimes you can have consistency, great consistently, but you're not super great one particular year to get you over that hump, because there's that one, and only one team can win, unfortunately. So, I mean, the fact that he was able to take them to five straight NFC championship games, the fact that he was able to get them into the Super Bowl, the fact that they was in the Super Bowl that year against the Patriots, once again, a Patriots team that just with Tom Brady is hard to bet against or whatever. I give him credit for doing that. And then the fact to go to Kansas City to see something in Patrick Mahomes. I mean, because Alex Smith was the quarterback there at first, and then have Patrick Mahomes come in there, run that offense, do what he does, whatever. That's a credit to Andy Reid. I don't think Andy Reid gets enough credit. I think people look at Bill Belichick when he was talking about, which I thought was outrageous, when he was saying that Patrick Mahomes would have won this Super Bowl, is he the GOAT? I'm like, are you out your damn mind? You still, Tom Brady's still, like, Tom Brady's calling the game. Like, you can't forget about Tom Brady. This man won seven Super Bowls, went to 10 Super Bowls, whatever. He is the GOAT. He's going to be the GOAT for a long period of time. Let Patrick Mahomes run out the rest of his career. You can talk. But if you want to talk about greatest coaches of all time, look, I understand Belichick won his Super Bowls and took him all those Super Bowls, whatever. He won six Super Bowls and took him to nine, I believe, or whatever. But at the same time, look at what Andy Reid has been able to do in that amount of time with the Kansas City Chiefs and the amount of games that he's won, and take it back to the Philadelphia Eagles with the quarterbacks he had. You took Tom Brady off the Patriots. You saw what the Patriots were. Everybody was asking, was it Belichick that was a blame, or was it Brady to get all the credit or whatever? And you saw when Brady left, he went to Tampa and won. He took that team to the Super Bowl. I'm not taking anything away from Belichick, because you need it all. But Belichick wasn't able to sustain that amount of success when he lost his quarterback. Andy Reid, no matter who the quarterback has been, and Donovan's great, don't get me wrong. Michael Vick, he saw something. Michael Vick gave him a chance. He was great. But, he won with Alex Smith when he was there. You know what I mean? Andy Reid's won with everybody that he's ever coached with. He's always been a winning coach, and I think he needs to get more credit to be up there in that GOAT conversation when it comes to greatest coaches of all time. But, that's just up to other people to say. But to answer your question, I don't know why the Eagles couldn't get that hump. I just think that as great as they were consistently, they just weren't great in that one particular season, great enough, good enough to get over the hump to actually win it all.
Yeah. And I agree, because when you look at Andy's resume, even Doug Peterson was under his camp. He came from under him, and he was able to win, bring the Eagles its first ever Super Bowl. And then, like what he's been able to do with the Chiefs, one thing about him, he knows how to put a team together and put players in positions to use their strengths and be successful.
And he
So.
knows how to coach men. He knows how to allow players to be players. He is a player's coach that, even though he's really nice and people always talking about, they know, hey, they respect him. And there is not one player out there that I've ever heard that didn't respect Andy Reid. The greatest of the greats always respect Andy Reid, no matter where he's been, because he's been fair. He's given them fair. He's just coached teams and he's won. And he came from a great coaching tree himself under Bill Walsh. So, like, that type of stuff, like, when you see that, it lets you know, man, that, you know what, a good pedigree, and you see the branches that he's been able to, like you said, the Doug Petersons of the world and stuff like that, that's won Super Bowls, whatever. That's part of his legacy. So let's give him the love and respect that he deserves as well.
So now I want to talk about college football. So we had National Signing Day last week, and now that players aren't required to sign national letters of intent, what does that entail? Like, what does that even mean now? signing day. They're not signing anything right now.
I mean, because it's there's nothing that's binding that keeps people there. You know what I mean? It's just like we're in a different era when it comes to college football and NIL and the transfer portal and all that. Like, you know, we just and I kind of like it that way in a sense. I think there needs to be some kind of regulation when it comes to the transfer portal, where if you are in the transfer portal, say I go to Colorado and play for a year, I have to stay there 2 years. If I go to a transfer portal, unless the coach gets fired or he suddenly resigns or he quit, you know, he quits or something like that, he goes somewhere else, then I'm free to go. Because if that coach recruited me, is it fair for me to come in here and have to be subjected to another coach that might not fit my style for what I want to do? And now I'm under his tutelage, and I don't want to be on his tutelage. And I might not be his player, so I can be in the transfer portal. So that's different, and it's the NIL. And so, like, if coaches don't have to commit, then I don't understand why players have to commit when it comes to signing and all that type of stuff like that. We know that they're going to be there when it's supposed to be the time that they're supposed to be there or whatnot. But I mean, it's just a different era. It's just a different way of doing things, and hopefully one day they'll be able to regulate it so that some players can stay there. Because even somebody that covers college football on a weekly basis at Fox, I'll go through and I'm like, oh, he's here now? Oh, he's there? Like they just skip around from school to school, and it's really bad in college basketball. Like, college basketball players just jump from team to team like it's nothing. I mean, there's a guy we always kid about named Charlie Moore that played like for four or five different teams, you know what I mean? And he played six, 7 seasons. I'm like, is he ever gonna graduate? You know, so it's just a different era these days. So when it comes to signing, you know, a lot of times people don't even know who they signed with. Like I remember Colorado got the quarterback, number two quarterback, and I can't think of his name right
I know what
now.
you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, but he signed, and I'm like, okay, well, it's prime. You know, a lot of people was wondering if prime, and I'm like, well,
Yeah. If he committed, then Coach Prime must be staying.
that's what I'm thinking. But then there was still talk that Prime was gonna go elsewhere. But I'm like, well, if he committed, then that must be some kind of Prime must have given him some kind of assurance that he's gonna stick around, stay at Colorado. So I mean, but you know, once again, with the way things are, things can change.
Right, but I don't think now they don't have to sit out. Like, of course, if your coach leaves, you're able to leave. But even now, you play 1 year, and if you want to leave, there are no stipulations.
No. They don't have. I'm saying that
Yeah.
there should be some regulation. That's all I'm saying. There used to be a time, like, if you were to like decommit, or you said, hey, I'm going to, and you could always you could give, you know, verbal commitment, and then when you make the sign or whatever, used to make it official, whatever. All I'm saying is, like, even in the transfer portal now, like, there are times where you can get in the transfer portal, go to another school, be at that school for a year, and then hop right back into the transfer portal. You could hop back in the transfer portal in the middle of the year. And to me, I think if you go and commit to a school, you should commit to that school, especially if NIL money, unless they promise you some NIL money that didn't come through. Like UNLV had this guy that got there and they didn't, you know, come through on this NIL money. If that's the case, then yeah, you can sit out and do whatever, because they didn't come through on their contract. But if you go to a school in the transfer portal, I believe that you have to be there. If the NIL and everything stands out, or they satisfy your NIL requirements, you should have to be there at that school for at least 2 years, play 2 seasons, unless your coach gets fired or he resigns and goes elsewhere. If that's not the case, or if there's some kind of hardship where you got to go back home to take care of your mom or whatever, whatnot. But you know, that's left up to the discretion of, you know, the programs and stuff like that.
Well, I'm glad you proposed that because with the pending litigation that's on the table, and I think it's going to be settled in April, and they're going to move to the revenue sharing model amongst the Power Four schools. Do you think athletes will now be required to sign contracts, pretty much like professionals, since they're going to be getting
Yeah,
paid?
I mean, they are professionals. If you're a professional, you should sign a contract. You really do. Yeah, since you're getting paid, absolutely. If it's revenue sharing or whatever and all that stuff like that, and they're going to be a part of, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the only way you can regulate things, man. It's just like, it's not fair, and it's not going to be the competition. It's going to be two conferences after a while. You know, if you look at it right now, especially in the world of football, it's two conferences right now. It's basically the Big Ten or the SEC. You know what I mean? I mean, the Big 12 is out there still, but outside of that, it's like you have those two major conferences that, you got the ACC that really, that's it. You got those four major conferences, but two of them are the ones that are the big dogs, the Big 10 and the SEC. They're getting the money, they get all the, and so what they can do is because they got those schools that draw in all the NIL money, they can bring the players there so you can attract these players. So how's that going to affect the balance of competition when it comes to these other schools that are in other conferences or whatever? It's not going to be fair. So in order to make college football, keep college football what it is. I even had somebody tell me yesterday when I was watching the Super Bowl, they say they prefer watching college football more so than the Super Bowl because every game matters. Well, some of that's going to be lost when you start looking at it, and it's going to be all these super teams and it's going to be regulated and all that type of stuff like that to two conferences, and the other conferences really don't matter. Even though you expand the playoff system or whatever, who's going to get the better competition? Who's going to get the better teams or the best better players to come there? I want to see all, if you got four conferences like you and maybe the independents or whatever, I want to see there is like strength. And I understand that sometimes that can go just like even in the NBA right now. You're gonna have two different conferences and different divisions. Some divisions are gonna be weaker than others and whatnot because the players aren't as good, or some conferences are gonna be better than others because but at the same time, that could shift back and forth because they play along the same model and they got the same they got the same rules that apply to everybody.
So no, I think the contract system is definitely going to be needed because they're going to have to regulate this transfer portal as well, like you said. And I think that's the only way you're going to decrease the chaos because you can implement the revenue sharing model, but if somebody's paying me more NIL money over here, I still may want to jump over here. So how do you stop that? So if you have a contract with somebody, with a school, then it makes it harder for you to move and you're a little bit more dedicated and committed. So I think that's probably the way we're going to go. And you talk about the playoffs and having all these games. Do you think that's going to be a part of, it's going to be a clause in the contracts for football players saying you have to play in this bowl game in order to receive your money? Because a lot of players like to sit out when they don't make the playoffs and not participate in the bowl games, which I feel like they should. So do you think that's going to be a part of the contracts as
I
well?
don't think that I don't think even if they can say they want to, but there's always going to be a way to get around that. Like if I'm a player and I know I'm a top 10 pick and I'm playing in the Liberty Bowl, you know what I mean? And I risk injury. I get it. I understand. Like, when we saw Cam Ward, play a half and then sit out the second half, whatever, so he can break a record or whatever, but not really be with his team. And it was good to see Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter playing those games, whatever. But still, there's a risk that's involved when it comes to those types of things. So even if they got a contract that says that, they can be like, hey, just like a lot of players do in professional leagues, I got a hamstring, I can't play this week, or I'm nursing something, or I'm not gonna play 1,000%, 100%. I'm gonna sit out or whatever. It's the last game. I think at this point, especially kids when they're in college, even if they're getting paid a contract or whatever, there's still going to be a part of them that says that there's a bigger goal that they have in mind, especially the bigger players. There are going to be some players like, you got a Will Howard who might be getting $1 million, from Ohio State. Why would he do it? Because NFL dreams, he might be a fifth or sixth round pick, right, in the NFL. But if you got a Cam Ward who's going to be a possible number one overall pick and he's making $2 million in NIL, where he got tens of millions of dollars on the table from being a first round pick or a top five pick, I think you got to kind of juggle that a little bit.
But you could get hurt anytime. You can get hurt the first game of the season, the middle of the season. I
You can.
mean,
I get it. I'm with you. I'm like, I wish those guys would play, but I also understand why they would caution, they would side on the, on the air on the side of caution because, once again, it's like, you can get hurt. Like you said, you can be hurt at the combine. You can get hurt at your pro day. You can get hurt walking down the street. Anything can happen. What's going to happen is going to happen. But at the same time, it's like, when you think about it, man, am I going to risk this? It's like, if somebody gave you a lottery ticket right now and it's the winning lottery ticket you're gonna be careful as hell. You just ain't gonna walk the same. You're gonna make sure that you're gonna get there safely. It's just gonna be until you get to that office and turn that lottery ticket in, you're gonna be cautious. I guarantee you hit the lottery and you find out you got that lottery ticket on Friday and that office doesn't open till Monday, you ain't going out.
I'm staying at the
You ain't
house.
going out. You ain't doing nothing. You go on Saturday and you staying in the house. You're gonna put that lottery ticket in the safe. You ain't doing nothing until Monday morning. You are gonna make sure ain't nothing gonna happen to you between then and now. Between now and then. You ain't.
I ain't talking to nobody. I ain't taking no
You
calls.
ain't.
Leave me alone.
Yeah, exactly. So if you know you got this lottery ticket that's about to come or whatever, yay, man. Hey, I got this far. I'm here now. But if I play that, you can go out. There's a chance that nothing could happen to you if you went to the club that Saturday night. You know what I'm saying? But is there a greater chance of something happening to you if you went to the club or you stayed at home? You know what I'm saying? And yeah, something can happen to you at home. You can have a home invasion. Something can happen to you at home. Anything can happen. But at the same time, if you know that that lottery ticket is there on Monday, you're going to cash that ticket on Monday, you ain't taking no chance between now and then. You just ain't.
I got you. Well, that last thing on this, I want to know why are the schools required or going to be required pending the litigation, which I feel like is going to be approved. The schools are going to be required to pay the players. Why not the NCAA? Because they have the most money out of everybody. Some schools aren't going to have the money.
Well, I mean, if then it has, once again, it got to be that revenue sharing. There's got to be like a pot. And so right now with the NIL is a collective. And that's why schools have general managers. That's why it's about boosters. The boosters are now legal. All the NIL is basically made is like boosters are now legal. We can put this money in a pot. We got this money to distribute to players. That's why Ohio State had $20 million in NIL money that they can distribute to their players. Now, general manager's job is like, how much does each individual player get? NCAA, somebody says, okay, well, I'm gonna put this money into a pot. And that's why baseball doesn't have revenue sharing. Like NFL has revenue sharing, other leagues have revenue sharing or whatever and stuff like that. But all that money, the earnings, got to go into a pot, and then it's divided up between the player when it comes to certain things. When it comes to these certain leagues, I don't know the exact CBA of how it works, but that's how it works when it comes to revenue sharing, like the TV contracts and everything. If when it comes to the TV contract, the Charlotte Hornets get the same amount as the LA Lakers. You know what I'm saying? Now you can get regional contracts that you can make your own and all that type of stuff like that. But when it comes to the national contracts, the billions of dollars that really pay these salaries, that's the revenue sharing or whatever. Now, and they do have a little revenue sharing when it comes to contracts, when it comes to their TV contracts, Fox and all that stuff like that. Each team, regardless if you're Alabama or Vanderbilt, you're going to get the same amount of money when it comes to the SEC, when it comes to like ESPN giving them money for their games and stuff like that. So that's distributed in some kind of way. But when it comes to the NIL and the collective and all that type of stuff like that, if I'm at Ohio State and I got big boosters that give my team $20 million and you at Clemson and you only giving your team $2 million, whatever, I'm like, I'm not paying all this money so that I can help you at Clemson. You know what I mean? So that's the difference there.
Okay. So let's talk NBA because we have NBA All-Star Weekend coming up. Do you think the new format for the All-Star game is going to make it more interesting for fans because it hasn't been the past several years?
I hope so, man. I'm so tired of the NBA All-Star. I never watch it. I'm like, it's just like, I don't want to see practice. I don't want to see dunk. Like, it's just, can you play some defense? Can we play like, I would love to see them play like they play. And I know it's off-season. I know they don't want to get hurt once again. I was just talking about people getting hurt. But at the same time, can we play some semblance of defense? I think if you made it a way, and I understand that the way they split it up with three teams, then Rising Stars, whatever, and coach, and have that round robin or whatever, I don't know how that's going to really affect them when they still got that same mindset. Like if you said, okay, well, you're talking about a pot, you're talking about money, we're talking about let's give them incentive. What drives people? Money. You say, we're going to give the winning team's going to get $10 million. The losing team's gonna get $1 million to split between them. Who gonna play hard? You think that'll make them
Everybody.
play hard? But if you tell them they all get the same amount of money no matter what, man, one team, they're gonna play hard. Because 10 minutes, regardless, I don't care how much money you got, to get extra money, to get that's how to think about the incentive for the in-season tournament. The incentive for the in-season tournament is like, who cares about winning? Because you ain't getting higher playoff seeding, you ain't getting a free trip to the playoffs or whatever. The incentive for the in-season tournament in the NBA is what?
Money.
That $500,000 that each player on that team will get. All-stars, as much money as they make, they still make millions of dollars still, man. They spend a lot of money just flying their people down there or whatever. If you could tell that person, hey man, we're gonna put $1 million in your pocket to play a game and win a game and have bragging rights or whatever and stuff like that, why not? That's gonna fuel some people because some of them NBA players need and want that money, as much money as they do have already. So I would guess getting more money. So I don't know how this format's gonna change anything or whatever, or it's gonna make them play harder, but we'll see.
But that's the thing, they're already getting a lot of money. Like you talk about in the in-season tournament, you feel like, oh, since it's $1 million instead of half a million, because they already make a lot of money. Most of the
But once
players is going to
again,
be playing.
so 500,000 make you play hard over a course of time. That's like how many games you play in the in-season tournament, like six. So over a course of time, that's 500. We're talking about $1 million to play hard for this one game. $1 million a player. $1 million a player. Let's say $1 million a player to play hard for this one game. If you win, I'm pretty sure because it's competition. I'm telling you, it will definitely help. Money is the greatest incentive for mostly everybody out there. And some other things I'm not gonna mention on this podcast, but
I got you. But okay, because NBA viewership, the ratings, they're down. That's been an issue. And I mean, we're talking about the guys you're speaking of playing in the All-Star game are the top of the top, the best players. So because there's a crisis going on now, and we're approaching the end of an era when you think about LeBron and KD and Steph. Now, you've had these trades to happen, which impacted Golden State, Steph's team, having Jimmy Butler go over there, having Luka join LeBron, which having an international star to kind of take the reins once LeBron leaves is kind of the idea. Nothing happened for the Suns and KD. That was a big thing towards the end of the trade deadline. Would he go? Would they shop him? But what do you think the NBA can do? Because I don't think more money is enough. To me, they're already playing complacent with the money they make. To me, they're not hungry anymore. I mean, it has gotten to the point where they just like to jack up threes. Like the energy is lackluster. You know what I'm saying? You look at the women's game because they haven't made as much money. They're still hungry, and I feel like that's why their game is so exciting. And of course, the women's game is way more fundamental and more pure, but it's like they're still trying to get to where the NBA guys are. They're already there. So, do you think money is the answer, or is it something else? Like, what is the NBA gonna do when we talk about not only the All-Star game, but just the future of the league?
I mean, in the future, the league got to play itself out. I think they got to bring back and people always talking about them jacking up threes and whatnot. Like threes are still fun and exciting. I think they've made it so soft in the NBA that like right now there's no competition. There's just so loose. It's almost like you playing on a wide open court. It's almost like you should just play 4-on-4 and make it so wide open. Or if you add a six man to make it a little bit more congested, or whatever. But there's not enough defense. There's not enough physicality. There's like the smallest little foul. I grew up in an era where these days when you get kicked out of a game, that would be a common foul. And I'm not saying that you should go back to that bully ball of the Pistons and the Knicks of the 90s, anything like that. But there's got to be a fair medium between what we used to have in the 90s when that was ugly to watch and what's right now when it's so wide open. So that's that when it comes to that. I think there needs to be a little bit more, some more rivalries. There needs to be a little bit more. We need to see a couple of more Draymond Greens on teams, a couple of more Jimmy Butlers, these hard workers, whatever people that I identify with. When it comes to the All-Star game again, I don't know exactly what's going to fix it, but once again, incentive to me for a lot of people, even if you make a lot of money, is money. Like people that make money like money, still like money. It ain't unless you say, I don't know what else you can do. You can't embarrass them. You can't make them pull the pants down in the middle of the court. You can't like it's not like. You can say, hey, well, the winner of this, the All-Star game or whatever. I know the baseball did it one year where whoever won the All-Star game, because they was trying to make it this like, okay, if the AL won the All-Star game, the NL won the All-Star game, whoever whatever the one all league won the All-Star game, they got home field advantage in the World Series. I mean, that was some incentive or whatever, but that's not fair to the individual teams out there or whatever. So I don't know what you can do for a group of all-stars coming together, coming from different conferences or whatever. I wouldn't give them home court advantage just because they won an all-star game for somebody that might not play as hard or whatever. And then teams, players are changing teams or whatever. So I once again, the only thing I can think of, and once again, I'm not a commissioner, and obviously there's a lot of smart people that's out there trying to rectify this situation that ain't got it right yet, but they ain't tried money. Once again, try the money. See how that works. And if you and they make a lot of money. Try the money. Put the money out there, put it on the table, and make it a winner take all game. I guarantee you, you might not get everyone on. LeBron them might not play because LeBron making $60 million a year, whatever. But there are a couple of all-stars on that team that would love to take that money, and they're gonna play hard. So we'll see.
I got you. And I want to say players like Lou Williams and KG have mentioned the fact that the game changed when they brought in the analytics. You know, it was way more physical. You talked about the 90s, but even the early 2000s with the Celtics or the mid 2000s, the Pistons, where it was defense, the physicality. But then they was like, okay, we need to score more points. You know, how the game is set up for every team to score over 100 points and all of these things. So it's a place for threes. Threes are exciting, but when it goes 5, 8 possessions and that's all they're doing, nobody's attacking the basket. You know, like you said, playing soft, the big men don't want to bang. They want to shoot threes nowadays. They don't want to go down in the post. So it's just a little different. And I wonder if, like you said, they're going to go back to that bully ball or that physical ball.
What happens is the problem was like when it's such a copycat league. So when there's a team that goes back and starts playing that kind of bully ball, throwing the ball down the post, letting them work through the center, who's working out of the post, whatever, playing inside out basketball, and they win championships, then the league starts to shift. When the Warriors started doing that with Steph and Klay and all those guys shooting the threes, whatever, then other teams started saying, hey, well, we need to match what they're doing. So when they had that run, the NBA, the NFL changes. Like the NFL, there could be teams that, hey, there was like 3 years ago, it was like, oh, running backs are non-existent. We don't even need running backs anymore. You know what I mean? They're expendable. So we just gonna pass the ball down the field because passing the ball is much better than running football. Now you see what Saquon Barkley was able to do. You see what the Eagles did in the running game. You see what they did with just great defense. If they continue to have that kind of run, outside of what Kansas City was able to do or whatever, and they win football games like that, guess what? People change. There was one time in the NFL where they were running a wildcat because teams were winning with the wildcat or whatever. That had a phase. So I think everything in sports has a phase because somebody adjusts and they have some kind of way to attack a defense or they win and they say, okay, that style is winning basketball or football games or even baseball or whatever. We need to try that. It has an error, and then somebody's going to stop, and then somebody else figures out another way to do it. So if they go back and they had like a team like the Nuggets who play inside out with Luka, but Luka can play,
The
with not
Lakers. The Lakers.
Nikola Jokic, I
Oh,
mean,
no. Okay.
Jokic, with Jokic, you can play inside and out and play that kind of guy with a big man or whatever. If they had that, or if, Embiid even shoots a lot of threes too, but what if they got like guys like that that won multiple and just continue to win championships after championships, you'll start seeing the league kind of sway that way. But as long as people are winning with threes and trying to defend the three or whatever, whatnot, or just, defending against that, that's the way the league is gonna go.
All right. Good deal. Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining the show. It's been a pleasure. Been
Course.
very informative. I had a lot of fun.
Me too.
So the last thing I want to ask, let the people know how they can follow you and keep up with everything you have going on.
You can follow me on all social media outlets on It's Mike Hill, ITS Mike Hill on Twitter, on I still call it Twitter, I know it's X, on Instagram and TikTok. And just continue to watch me on Fox Sports, behind the scenes, Thrill of Entertainment, like I said. Announcement coming out in a couple of months about the documentary that I'm an executive producer on, and I'll be at a comedy club near you soon, and also acting as well. So just trying to do it all.
All right, we'll be on the lookout for it.
I appreciate it.
All right, this has been another episode of Sports Minded. I'm your host, Brittany Young. Until next time, y'all be blessed. We out of here.